Time for Recollections. The National Broadcasting Company invites you to relax and reminisce with Recollections from the early days of radio. In this special series, we delve into the vast NBC library of sound to relive the memorable moments of radio's past, the stars who entertained you then, the special events that thrilled you. And to guide us through these priceless recollections, here is Ed Herlihy.
Thank you, Fred Collins, and good evening, everyone. It's nice to be with you again. Naturally, the birthday of Abraham Lincoln sent me to our library of sound to see what radio recollections we have of this great figure in our national history. Perhaps the most famous play about Lincoln was written by the late Robert Sherwood, Abe Lincoln in Illinois, starring Raymond Massey. Well, shortly after that play opened on Broadway, that was in the fall of 38, Mr. Massey did several scenes from it on the Rudy Valley program, and fortunately, recordings of that program enable us to recall Mr. Massey's vivid performance. This is the speech that closes the drama. Abraham Lincoln was about to leave Springfield, Illinois, for his first inauguration in Washington. These are the words he addressed to his fellow citizens, and indirectly, to you and me, to every citizen who hopes that our American institutions will live on in the world.
My dear friends, I have to say goodbye to you. I'm going now to Washington with my new whiskers, of which I hope you approve. No one not in my situation can appreciate my feelings of sadness at this parting. To this place and the kindness of you people, I owe everything. I have lived here a quarter of a century and passed from a young to an old man. Here my children have been born, and one is buried. I now leave, not knowing when or whether ever I may return. I am called upon to assume the presidency at a time when 11 of our sovereign states have announced their intention to secede from the Union, and threats of war increase in fierceness from day to day. It is a grave duty which I now face. In preparing for it, I have tried to inquire what great principle or idea it is which has kept this Union so long together. And I believe that it was not the mere matter of separation of the colonies from the motherland, but that sentiment in the Declaration of Independence which gave liberty to the people of this country and hope to all the world. This sentiment was the fulfillment of an ancient dream which men have held through all time, a dream that one day they might shake off their chains and find freedom in the brotherhood of life. We gain democracy, and there is now doubt whether it is fit to survive. Perhaps we have come to the dreadful day of awakening, and the dream is ended. If so, I am afraid it must be ended forever. I cannot believe that ever again will men have the opportunity we have had. Perhaps we should admit that and concede that our ideals of liberty and equality are decadent and doomed. I have heard of an Eastern monarch who once charged his wise men to invent him a sentence which would be true and appropriate in all times and situations. They presented him with the words, "And this too shall pass away." That is a comforting thought in times of affliction. "And this too shall pass away." And yet, let us believe that it is not true. Let us live to prove that we can cultivate the natural world that is about us, and the intellectual and moral world that is within us, so that we may secure an individual, social, and political prosperity whose course shall be forward, and which, while this earth endures, shall not pass away. I commend you to the care of the Almighty, as I hope that in your prayers, you will remember me. Goodbye, my friends and neighbors.
That was Raymond Massey in the final scene of the play Abe Lincoln in Illinois, a radio recollection from 1938. Next, we answer many of your requests to recall another of the well-loved radio personalities of the past. The date is February the 12th, 1939.
Hear ye! Hear ye! Hear ye, Alexander Wolcott, the town crier!
Today, the Magic Key program falls upon a notable anniversary, and we have come to dedicate a portion of that program to the memory of Abraham Lincoln, as recalled to you now by Mr. Wolcott.
Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. That was Lincoln speaking. Speaking at Gettysburg 75 years ago. Speaking in the darkest days of the Civil War. Speaking to a multitude of 15,000 standing in the autumn sunshine on Cemetery Hill. A speech now memorized by every schoolboy in any land where English is spoken or read. A speech which in the long history of human liberty calls back across the centuries as mountaintop to mountaintop signals back to the funeral oration of Pericles. A peculiarly American speech, which will certainly last as long as America does, and perhaps longer. It has long been an ironic commonplace that the Gettysburg Address, when it was spoken for the first time, made no stir at all. In the newspapers next day, plenty of attention was accorded the ceremonies themselves, but nearly all of it went to the fine flight of old-fashioned oratory, a discourse lasting two mortal hours, with which, before Lincoln rose to speak, Edward Everett had first rung the Gettysburg welkin. Next day, for several reasons, the space of the papers all went to Everett. And the president, oh yes, Mr. Lincoln also made a few remarks. That was the general effect. For a time, it looked as if the world would little note, nor long remember. But you may ask, what about the people actually present? What was the effect of the speech on them?
Time.
What? Oh, yes, thanks. That interruption was a signal. My friend Mr. Cross has been holding a stopwatch over me. I asked him to break in when I'd spoken exactly 2 minutes and 35 seconds. I'll explain why later. Now, let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, about Lincoln's speech. What was its effect on the audience at Gettysburg? I'll tell you. Almost nil. And I'm sure I know why. They didn't hear it. The great majority didn't. If you and I had been at Gettysburg when Lincoln spoke, the chances are 10 to 1, we wouldn't have heard what he said. Let me see if I can show you why this must have been so. Just think of any play you've ever been to. Did you note how the playwright was mighty careful to postpone any important matter until after the first 10 minutes? Not merely because stragglers would still be coming down the aisles, falling over feet, banging the seats, and rattling programs, but also because, between the human voice and the human ear, there's something, well, call it the arc of attention. In the theater, it takes a bit of time to establish that arc's trajectory, and not only in the theater. If you haven't yet been cured of after-dinner oratory, note at your next banquet how any experienced speaker always devotes his first 2 or 3 minutes to saying nothing at all, so that his listeners, with their varying rates of adjustment, can be tuning in. When a gathering is held under the sky, the need for such purely vocal preliminaries is doubled, trebled. Now at Gettysburg, Mr. Lincoln spoke not only in the open air, and mind you, long before the days of amplifiers, but to an audience of 15,000 that wasn't even standing still. Remember that that audience had just been trapped by a two-hour harangue. When Mr. Everett did sit down, what did that audience do? Applaud? Yes, of course. But during the welcome singing of a hymn, many started to move toward the exits, and you know why. When across that moving crowd, word spread like a ripple of wind across a grain field that the president had risen to speak, some of the runaways turned in their tracks and started shoving back to the rostrum. So it wasn't only to a huge crowd in the open air that Lincoln spoke, but to one that wasn't even stationary. Before even the few within easy reach of his voice could really have begun to listen, he'd have had to talk for at least 5 minutes. 5 minutes? Long before that, Mr. Lincoln had finished and sat down. After all, the Gettysburg Address is only 10 sentences. It consists, did you know, of only 272 words. Mr. Lincoln spoke for just 2 minutes and 35 seconds. Why, I'd hardly got started when Mr. Cross stopped me. Isn't it therefore clear, beyond all doubt, that of the 15,000 at Gettysburg, only an inconsiderable few really heard what Lincoln said? This much any speaker would know, and mark you, none better than Lincoln himself. Lincoln, who in his campaigns had spoken by torchlight to many a milling crossroads crowd. No one in this country ever knew better how to make an audience listen. Any audience. That crowd at Gettysburg would have heard everything he had to say, if he'd cared 2 cents, whether they heard him or not. So he can't have cared. Why not? There's only one answer. He wasn't speaking to them. Well, then, to whom was he speaking? Not long ago, I put that question to a man who knows as much about the Civil War as anyone of my acquaintance, John W. Thomason, Jr., of the United States Marines. By way of answer, Colonel Thomason told me about a letter he once found in a trunk in a Texas attic. A letter written in 63 by a young Confederate captain who'd been wounded at Gettysburg and was still there on crutches 4 months later when the battlefield was dedicated. That Texan must have been one of the scattered few, there are such in every audience, who did hear what Lincoln said. To his father back home, the young Southerner wrote, "Pop, we've got to stop fighting that man." Wherefore the colonel thinks that if Lincoln were indifferent to those present at Gettysburg, it was because, over their heads, he was talking to the South. It is my own notion, I can't escape it, that over the heads of the South, he was talking also and perhaps chiefly to posterity. Talking to Americans who on that day at Gettysburg were as yet unborn and unbegot. For all Lincoln knew, it was the last chance he'd have. Always there was a strong sense of doom upon him. And anyway, in November 63, he couldn't be sure there was ever going to be a second inaugural. While there was yet time, he wanted to state his case, to state it in words so simple that everyone could understand it, and in words so few that everyone could remember it. The ceremonies at Gettysburg gave him his chance. He took it. But in the America of yesterday, in the soft, easy America in which I grew up, the Gettysburg Address had begun to lose its meaning. Of course, we knew the words by rote. But did we know them by heart? On every possible occasion, we recited them. But did we hear them? It dawns on me that, like the milling crowd at Gettysburg, we never really heard them at all. Until now. Until today. Today, quite suddenly, those words have taken on the meaning he must always have meant them to have. Conceived in liberty. The words come to life. They get up and walk. They bestride the world. Whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure, well, can ours? Are you so sure? Since first they were spoken, have those words ever had such painful immediacy as they seem to have right now? Have they ever meant as much as on this 12th of February in the year 1939 they mean to us? In an age when bandits on horseback the world around are challenging all that Lincoln had and was, the words he spoke at Gettysburg long ago wake us from our sleep, sound across the world like a trumpet. Will we hear him, really hear him? At last, there's still time. Let's get closer to the platform and listen. Mr. Lincoln has reached his final paragraph. It is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Thus, Mr. Lincoln at Gettysburg, 75 years ago, it is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here. For whom was that speech meant? There's your answer, in his own words. For us. For us, the living. For us to resolve and see to it, and see to it, that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Mr. Wolcott, what special music he thought would be most appropriate for any program commemorative of Abraham Lincoln? He answered, "The music of Negro voices raised in song." Therefore,
"Push it the battle of Jericho, 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 Lord, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down.
And moon,
Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, 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 and the walls come tumbling down.
Lord, you may talk about the King of Gideon,
Lord,
you may talk about the Man of Song. In the night,
Lord, Joshua, at the Battle of Jericho, up to the walls of Jericho, he marched his spear in hand. No blood and ram horn, Joshua cried, in the battle.
That was the J. Rosamond Johnson Choir concluding a most inspired talk on Lincoln by the town crier, Alexander Wolcott. Need I remind anyone that tomorrow is Valentine's Day, and I have found an appropriate recollection for this holiday, too. Two Hearts and Three Quarter Time, romantic music that recalls Frank Black, former musical director of NBC. You certainly will remember his conducting on so many of the fine radio programs of the 30s. Frank Black conducting the NBC Orchestra in Two Hearts in Three-Quarter Time. And once again, we must close the door on our library of sound. Next week, I'm sure you'll want to join me for Recollections of Al Jolson and Helen Hayes in an excerpt from her stage success, Victoria Regina. If you have any requests of your favorites of the past, please send them to me, Ed Hurley, care of the National Broadcasting Company, 30 Rockefeller Plaza, Radio City, New York. Until next week, then, good night, everyone.
Ed Herlihy has been your host on Recollections. Join him next week at this time for more highlights in the history of radio broadcasting. This is Fred Collins. Recollections is an NBC Radio Network production directed by Bob Maurer.
This is the NBC Radio Network.